News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, gentle listeners. Yes, it is Sunday, so that must mean this is Soundbites. And no, Nick is taking the day off. I think he's still contemplating the issue of, having to deal with a daughter that's going to drive soon. Okay. It's weighing heavy on his mind.
He's doing a little time travel. Yes. Back to those olden days when she didn't almost going to drive. When they
I
had
think
no
he's
cars.
Finally hitting them, yeah. So, yes, it is Soundbites, and it is Sunday, so I must be Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites, where we'll talk about any of your computer questions. So you know the number, you know the drill. After, 19 years, let's, not be bashful. I know it's a nice day. Heck, I'd probably be home working on other projects too, but luckily I get to come in and do the show and, answer your questions and have a lot of fun, which we've been doing and going over that. Matter of fact, one thing that I want to talk about, you guys jump into, that we're seeing a lot of right now. I know Nick normally gets into the news and everything else, but
He didn't write any this week.
He didn't write any, so.
How could you compete with Nick?
He's got a lot on his mind there.
That's true.
We'll let him contemplate it this weekend. It was Wayne Heavy, so we won't go there. But anyways, right now, I'm seeing a lot of it. And, this is getting very disheartening in the fact that folks are still falling for stupid scams. Yep. And what I mean by that, folks, is right now there is a big scam going on. I don't know what country is really in on this. It's either got to be Russia or into Nigeria or one of those third world companies where right now folks are getting their machines infected and they're coming up and they're seeing this XP antivirus. It's either 2008 or 2009.
We're even seeing it on Macs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your computer's infected. Click here to buy our program to clean it.
And the folks are falling for the same old scam. And they're asking you to either pay $19.99, $29.99. And I've seen even, I was talking to a gentleman in Florida via email that wound up paying $49.95. And he's still infected. And I go, well, yeah, because it's a scam.
He's probably more, if you're lucky, they just stole your money. You're probably more infected now.
You're still infected and... Oh, by the way, they have your charge card. So now you're also running the risk that not only will they take the $49.95 right now, but if they can, they'll pass that number around. And, you might get hit with other things other than removing this, especially depending on who's doing the scam. You could be added to a list and you've given them your charge card because that's the only way they can do it is with a charge card, your full information. They can create one heck of a list. And unless you actually know the company you're doing it with, don't do it.
And if you do, if a message pops up and says Symantec needs you to install this update, go to Symantec's website yourself and download it.
Don't rely on links. I mean, often folks are getting fooled by these links that they think, they're going to somewhere that it looks legitimate. I mean, some of these bank ones. Yep. In fact, I just had another one for a key bank. It looked as official as all get out. I mean, the logos were there, the watermarks and everything else. There's only one problem. Because they were saying my account's way off. And it's good.
I don't have a key bank account.
I have never had one key bank account. Now,
and so somebody would obviously click that link to send it back. I don't have a key bank account. You better find out who you really meant to send it to.
Yeah, and it's like,
we meant to send it to you, and thank you for clicking.
Yeah, click one more. We got an active one, Charlie, and you just confirm building their list of real people that now they turn around and accumulate that information just by you clicking saying yes. You can turn around and they've affirmed it, and boom, now you're on their list as a viable person, and they can sell that list, and that's how they make their money.
We are also seeing more copies of the Mac DNS Trojan in the wild now at different sites. It used to be just some CD porn sites, but now it's showing up on, again, what looked to be perfectly legitimate sites to download video updates, because that Masquerades is a QuickTime update. So with more and more people downloading video off the internet and the weird codecs some people use when they create the video, you can go to a website claiming to be a new QuickTime codec to let you watch that movie, and it's the Mac Trojan. And that has to download it. You give it your password, and then you're infected. And the way the Mac one works is it puts a fake DNS entry in your computer. And the DNS we've talked about before is like the phone book for the internet. So you type in google.com, it looks up the phone book, what the real numbers are for Google, and then goes there. So these fake DNSs send you to a phishing site and steal your information.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go to the phones. We got Bruce in Rochester. Good morning, Bruce. How can we help you today?
Oh, you can help me a lot.
Well, we'll try, you know.
I was installing a HP printer,
mm-hmm.
and I got down to the end of the printer, about the end of the install, and it come up with a screen that said, fatal error. It told me to go to www.com/support/fatal error. Well, there must have been something before.
It may have said hp.com.
Yeah.
Now, this fatal error occurred upon installation of the driver, Bruce?
Yes.
Now, Bruce, is this a USB printer, and what operating system are you running?
Oh, I'm sorry, Windows XP.
Windows XP Service Pack 2?
Yeah.
Okay, and it's a USB printer?
Yes.
Something went wrong.
Did you have any other HP printers installed before this?
Yes.
Did you uninstall those?
Yes.
Yeah, because that's often a problem with printers from the same company. The drivers will fight each other. But you said you did install the old driver before the new one. Did you install this off a disk or a download from HP?
Off a disk.
Yeah, you may want to go to HP's website and download the current driver. What comes on the disks are usually old, and you're often better
but
off going to the website.
But if this is a brand new printer, it shouldn't be that old. I mean, granted, it'll be old. Yeah. I definitely still do it after it, but it should get
superseded,
installed.
Not old.
True, yeah. One thing to check on is if the printer supports XP. We're starting to see devices now that they're only making Vista drivers.
Really?
Yeah. Not very many, so it's unlikely to be that
especially
problem.
HP is noted for going backwards to the other models, even through 98. One of my suggestions would be is to try uninstall everything again, because evidently, well, it's obvious, you got a hiccup somewhere there that it's not installing for you. But I would, all right, tell you what, here's even a better one. Because you can get to the web, correct?
Yeah.
All right, because even though programs say they uninstall everything, they really don't. They lie. And that's just between you and me, and nobody else will know this.
Yeah.
All right, here's what you do. Is you go to do a Google search for Revo, R-E-V-O.
R-E-V-O.
We have it on our link list, too.
And it's on our link list. Yes, it's Roger Oscar Victor Oscar. No, that's wrong. Roger
Echo.
Echo. Yeah,
Echo.
Victor Echo.
Depends if you do military or police.
Yeah.
Or aircraft.
Yeah.
I think you'd be Roger
so
Echo
if you,
Victor
if you would,
Oscar.
Go to that. You'll do a Google search for that. Download that program. Install it.
That's
what it does is it's a great uninstaller program. And once you select that and say uninstall, you'll get a menu that'll say four different options. If you take the fourth one instead of the third, it will then ask you, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to the registry. It looks into the registry and will ask you, do you want to delete all these? So you say select all and then delete. You'll do that twice. Because it'll also look for all the programs in any of the subdirectories for HP. It really cleans things out thoroughly. I'm very impressed with the program. I've been using it for a while now, and I'm going to put it on my list of for the Soundbite CD. And for you folks up in Second Life, I'm going to be posting that this coming month for the software package of the month. Because it is a great program, one of our listeners. That's the other great thing about Soundbites. It's through the listeners, you know, you can interact with those and find out other solutions because we can't do everything to everybody. So, you know, it was through another listener. I wish I remember who did that so I could give them credit, but it was a great program. I've been playing it, testing it out, and it works great. So I would download and use that program first, shut down, and then try reinstalling it fresh. Don't hook the printer up, though, first. Let the software say...
Yeah, that's a big thing. Don't plug in a USB printer until the software asks you to.
Yeah, don't let it go ahead and do its thing, and then plug it in when it tells you to, because it'll come up and give you a warning saying, oh, I can't find this printer. So then you plug it in when it asks you to, and usually things go a lot smoother. Try that, Bruce, and let us know. All right. Tell you what, we'll move on to the next caller. We got Victor and Irondequoit. That sounds kind of weird. Victor and Irondequoit.
Better than Irondequoit and Victor.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Victor, how can we help you today?
Well, my son's having a hard time installing a game on his computer. We get this error. It's called 1607. It says, unable to install Shield scripting runtime. We click OK on it, and nothing happens.
Install Shield is the Norton program.
We don't have Norton.
No, it's not. That's no. Install Shield isn't Norton. It's a general installer program.
The Windows, is it having problems with the Windows installer?
It says Install Shield, whatever that is. Install Shield Wizard.
You know, I'm starting to see between the Install Shield, and we had two machines. One was a PC, XP machine, and another was a Vista. That something's going around that's destroying the installer, the Windows installer, or the installer shield. I still haven't been able to figure it out yet because it's, like I say, stopping us from loading any other software. To whereas one person had that the XP antivirus program that I was talking about before, and they tried to undo it themselves and just mucked it up more to where now I've got to totally install the program all over. But going back to your problem.
What number did you say that was?
1607.
All right, Steve's looking that up. Now, I take it your machine's got enough of the qualifications to run this program?
Well, he's had it on before, but this is a series of different themes, and one of the themes wasn't running, so I said, just uninstall the whole thing, and then let's reinstall it. And that's when we can't install anything.
Yeah, there's a Microsoft Tech note about downloading and reinstalling the install script engine. So apparently this is a known problem when you're trying to install things on XP.
What you might want to do is Steve will put a link up to this posting.
Mm-hmm.
He'll have it up in just a couple of minutes. And you might want to follow Microsoft's instruction there. And again, just like the other caller, what I would recommend for you is do the same thing. Go for that Revo program. It's R-E-V-O. Download that and use that to uninstall the programs. Is even though Microsoft says, you know, you go to the add remove programs, supposedly that's supposed to get rid of everything, it really doesn't.
Is that on your site?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, there's a link there, and or you can do a Google search for Revo, R-E-V-O.
All right, I'll
it's
try
a
that.
Great uninstaller program. But like I say, use option 4. Option 4 does the best part in removing. It literally gets rid of all the things in the registry. And the reason I'm for that is because if you use that option and keeping the registry trim and slim, your machine runs better.
Is your son installing this program in the administrator account or a standard account?
Well, he was doing it in his account. I'm the administrator, so he went over to my side and we're trying to install it.
Yeah, three of the causes of this error are that you don't have permission to install.
So
the install that failed probably messed up the system, so now he can't
use the Revo, uninstall it, and try it again. Let us know, Victor. Be interested to know. All right, folks, that's the music. That means we got to take a break. Be back in just a few minutes. And for the folks that are online, stay on the line. If you're not, why not? You know, give us a call. We'll get your computer questions answered. Welcome, listeners. You're welcome back to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And you're listening to Soundbites. Yeah, going back to the other caller there, you know, again, I'd be interested to know if that does solve his problem with that as far as that game. Because like I say, we're seeing a lot of stuff lately, and I'm wondering if there's something else out there, like we were talking during break, that's sneaking in on these machines. It's still under the radar because it hasn't affected enough people yet that it's stopping us from installing other stuff. If other folks have run into that issue, I'd like to hear anybody else that's had issues or being blocked from installing something. Well,
trouble installing a program is such a common and generic, problem.
But yeah. Like I say, right now, this specific one is saying that the Windows installer, you start to get it installed, and it goes maybe 3/4 of the way through it, and it stops and says, oh, sorry, Windows installer has failed. You don't have the rights or whatever. Or you must be running in safe mode. So, yeah, if you've experienced any of that, let us know. Next, we'll go back to the phones, and we're going to Ed in Oswego. Ed, how can we help you this morning, sir?
Hi, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
I have several unknown hard drives, and I want to make each hard drive a slave so that I can do antivirus and anti-spyware scans on them. I don't want to infect my primary computer. I've never done this before. Are there any precautions I can take to protect my computer from infection? I've heard
don't use it.
Previous...
the only thing you can do is don't use it. Yeah. But the, yeah, there are things you can do to minimize the chance of infection.
Now, how many other drives are you going to be hooking up to this? Wait a minute. Because you're saying you want to make all of them slaves. One, you can't. But don't get discouraged yet. How many hard drives are we talking here?
Well, I've got three that I want to do one at a time.
Oh, well, if you want to do one at a time, I mean, if they were all hooked up to the machine at the same time, because you can have two masters and two slaves, but there's the primary chain and the secondary chain.
And
see,
each chain
two
has one
each
master.
Each chain
one.
Has a primary and a slave.
Master and slave on the
or prime. Master and slave, or you go cable select on all of them, but it'll still go for the primary one on cable one, and then it'll go to the second one, and then it goes over to the second direct.
And yeah, that's an IDE. What's nice about the new SATA drives is you don't have to worry about that anymore. You just plug it in.
Yeah, and
it's auto selecting. Yeah,
yeah. It goes to the four drives. So yes, you could set up each one, but the thing of it is though, which is easier, is just set it to cable select, because most likely if your drive in there now is the only drive, it's probably set to cable select. So if you set this other one as cable select in its IDE, it'll just automatically set it up as the second drive. And you can scan that.
And it'll work.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, as long as you do one at a time, unless you go through the whole master-slave thing to get them all installed at once.
And you can just do one at a time, scan it, and clean it out.
As far as, you know, in general, the ways to minimize the risk of viruses, basically don't go to CD websites, you know, just go to the mainstream sites. Don't download files from people you don't know. Don't go to peer-to-peer file sharing networks. Be very, very cautious and read carefully any messages that pop up, because there's so many fake messages offering to sell you an antivirus program that are fake and just designed to steal your money, as we were talking at the earlier top of the show.
Yeah.
And so in your case, I might suggest as well, disconnecting the internet connection while you're scanning these slave drives.
Just in case it wants to go out the internet.
Do the update before you disconnect. Update your antivirus definitions and then disconnect the internet and then check your slave drives.
There's no read-only setting, because I thought I heard on a previous show that there was some kind of a read-only setting.
Not on hard drives. That's deep in the firmware, and you need special software to do it. You won't get there. There's forensic software, and there's a forensic controller. Who makes it? Yeah. Weeby makes one.
Yeah.
There's a forensic IDE controller where you plug it in and is set to read-only, so that when, you know, the cops are looking at the drive, they cannot write to the drive when that, you know, leads to the chain of evidence.
I've seen some of that software that, one, we can never get our hands on it, but, oh, they are such cool toys. I wish I could get my hands on it.
Well, CSI, I got to find the link now.
There is a couple programs out there. They're government only, but for diagnostics and everything else, oh, man, they kick butt.
CSI, one of the CSI shows has been using the Weeby forensic hard drive kit that apparently anyone can buy. It's god-awful expensive, but anyone can buy it.
Again, it's, you know, because you ultimately got to pass some of that cost down to the others.
Yeah.
So, yeah, give that a shot and let us know. But like I say, you shouldn't have any problems, Ed. Good luck. Next, we'll go to Kurt in Irondequoit. Kurt, you got an answer for the printer issue?
Yes, I do. I face the same thing. Hewlett-Packard makes a scrubber program.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll have to run the one for the new printer and then run it for the old printer. And it'll clean everything out for all the users.
Cool.
And it's, you know, you can just do it Packard website, the HP.com. You list the printers you want to download the stuff for, and it takes a while to work through it. But they do have the scrubber programs.
All right.
And if you got a second, I got another question.
Yeah, go ahead. You gave us an answer. So, yeah, you're entitled at least one question.
I'm going to be emigrating to Costa Rica, where there is no internet where I'm going. I bought a coffee farm. And
nice. How cool is that?
Well, I wanted to miss the Obaminator. Is there a satellite?
Yeah, there are several satellite internet companies. HughesNet and WildBlue are the two big ones.
But don't you need a hookup through phone lines? I don't even have phone lines. The only way you can
not anymore. It used to be that you used a telephone for uploading and a satellite for downloading, but now it uses two-way on the satellite.
Oh, it does. And Do you have any idea which is better, cheaper, easier?
They're both about the same. It's just you're probably going to end up, when you get there, see who services that area. Or you could call ahead of time now, see if they service Worcester.
Well, that's
because it depends on where the satellites point to and what area they cover.
Mm-hmm. Add a suggestion.
Yeah.
As a former traveler, contact the U.S. Embassy. I presume you've done that already.
Right.
You want to talk to the commercial attaché and
they
find out.
They told me I can't get anything except on the coast, which is what I found out to be.
Like for domestic service.
Yeah, you can get analog cell if you go up on the top of a hill and hold a cell phone over your head. It's like, really? I mean,
and point to the north?
Hmm? Yeah.
And point to the north, right?
Exactly.
And with the voodoo doctor or something next to you?
Sunny,
blessing your coffee bean harvest?
So which of the satellite providers have the two-way satellite connection? Or are they all?
Both of them.
Yeah, they both do. And, you know, like Steve was saying, call ahead of time. I don't know when your time frame is to head down there. But, you know, check it out ahead of time. So this way, when you go down there, it's one less problem that you have to deal with.
Well, that's what I'm sort of halfway there and halfway. I'm still in Irondequoit, but I'll be moving about the end of September. But
all right, and you know our address here, so we all like, you know, if you got a nice Colombian dark roast coffee, just send us up a couple.
Costa Rican, Darcy.
My first harvest will be this fall.
Yeah. I just found an interesting website.
And just send us a couple pounds. We'll sort of taste test it and let it know.
Okay.
I found a website about a guy blogging about internet services in Costa Rica.
Oh, yeah?
I'll post that link for you.
Appreciate it.
TheRealCostaRica.com.
Alrighty.
If you don't know it already, you're going to love Costa Rica.
Oh, I already know it, and I already love it. And there's no snow. You know that, right?
Yes, I do.
Really?
But then you've got time in El Salvador.
You got hurricanes and earthquakes, right?
Well, yeah. But, you know,
there's always something.
Right?
Yeah, I'd rather put up with the snow than my home blowing down to the next country.
Well, the hurricanes
are further to the north.
Right, hurricane once or twice a year,
except
or snow for 6 months.
Except for the one that strays and comes down through my house. That would be my luck.
Well, anyway, I thank you for your help, guys.
You're welcome, and like I say, you know the address. Send us the coffee.
I will.
Okay.
Bye.
Good luck, Kurt. All right, moving right along. Let's go to Mike in Parma. Go ahead, Mark. Mike?
I like your show.
Thank you.
A general question, is there any difference in performance and reliability between processors like AMD, Turian, X2, and Intel, Centrino? Well, what is the difference? Is there any?
They're all different families of processors with different capabilities.
So there's dual core. There's now the Pentiums, which are quad core.
Each different chips have different amounts of cache.
And the big thing, different price tags.
Right. The more you pay, the faster it is, sort of in general. But, you get a chip with 256K cache, and it will be a little slower than one with 512 cache. And the new Harpertown chips Apple's are using, there's 12 megabytes of cache on the quad-core processor.
Okay, so that's what it comes down to.
And then the other key thing, though, Mike, is that you definitely want to do, and I can't stress this enough, is folks to you get a separate dedicated graphics card, you know, either 256 or 512K graphics.
Built-in graphics is cheap. Dedicated graphics is faster. That's going to be your biggest question. Are you looking for cheap or are you looking for fast?
But you can even still do a good, inexpensive 512K graphics card. It might set you back maybe $50, but in the long run, is well worth every penny that you're paying for it. The other key thing
in fact,
right
a lot
now,
of times you can add that later. Get one of built-in graphics, and then add a good video card yourself.
And the other key thing is right now, memory is super cheap. So go with 4 gigs of memory.
Max it out.
Yeah, even though your system,
Windows won't see more than 3.
Well, they can still cash out another gig.
Yeah.
So, you know, do it that way. Go the 4 gig because down the road, once System 7 comes out, you know, you'll be a happy camper.
Beautiful. How about reliability? Is there any reliability difference between Intel and AMD?
No. Here's the thing, though. Right.
It's all statistics.
It's Ford versus Chevy. They both do the same thing. Here's They're both the one, just as reliable. They both have just as many failures.
But here's the one thing, though, granted, and chip-wise, but here's the one thing that AMD can't say. Because it's really not a factor. You know, when you take two chips, say you take the Intel chip and you take the AMD chip, I'm talking dual core right now. when you're talking to two chips, AMD and, say, the Intel are both the same speed. But what happens is AMD's, like the plus chips, the 2000 or 6000 plus, what is happening there is, say, the Intel is doing 1,000 instructions per millisecond. The AMD is doing 1,001. So technically, they're the same speed. It's just that it's doing one task per millisecond, which doesn't make it any, you know, they can't say, well, it's any faster because they go by the speed.
Right. You can't rely on clock speed as a performance measure anymore.
It goes
right
to the efficiency of the architecture and the internal design.
Yeah, and that's doing more tasks per millisecond. So that's why, you get a
3 gigahertz chip with a 600 megahertz front side bus, or a 2 gigahertz chip with an 800 megahertz front side bus.
Yeah, I prefer the AMD chips, but either one is good. Like I say, it comes down to the pocketbook.
As you can tell, Mike, it's a complicated situation, but pretty much in today's market, you can't go wrong. Everything works fine. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to John in Mount Morris. Oh, he's got a Trojan for a Mac.
I heard you're talking about the Mac Trojan. I was wondering if there's any scanning programs out there to find it, either shareware or payware.
I use Clam XAV.
Does it find it yet? I haven't looked at Clam Finds It yet.
Well, I haven't gotten a report on it, so that either means it doesn't find it, or I haven't gotten it.
There's a terminal command you can run to see if you're infected by it. If you do sudo crontab -L, that will let you know if there's a root cron job. We're going to delve into Unix a minute here. Cron is a program that runs programs every now and then. So one thing the DNS does is load a cron job to make sure it keeps your machine infected. So if you have a cron job in your super user, then that likely means you're infected. You can also look in your, and I'm going to post a link to this article too. If you look in your hard drive library internet plugins, if there's one called plugin.settings, or I've started seeing one called quicktime.xtm or xmp, something like that, a weird file extension that doesn't exist, that's also the indication of the virus. If you're running Leopard, you can look in your DNS tables in system preferences, and if the DNS listed there is not your ISP's DNS, it's usually an 85 dot something is the fake one, then you're infected. It's a little harder to find the DNS entries in Tiger. You have to run a command line program for that as well.
Okay,
so it's
great.
Basically, it masquerades as a QuickTime video saying you need to install this codec to play the video. Mm-hmm. QuickTime is from Apple, so if you're not at Apple's website and it's not Apple saying there's an update for QuickTime, it's probably fake.
Great, thanks.
Sure.
Okay. We got time for another caller? No, oh, okay.
There goes the music.
Taking us right on out. Oh, we're sliding in there. Oh, it's almost like he knows what the heck he's doing in there.
That's more to be said for out here. We have no idea what we're doing over here.
Well, that's okay. That's why they hired me to save you. You know what I'm saying? So you don't crash and burn. I'm just saying.
Wait a minute. Let me get my feet
a up. Highly trained professional.
I got to tell you guys something when we come back from the break.
Okay. We'll let you. Since you control the buttons, what can we do? You know, say no? Yeah, right. That'll get me too far. All right, folks, tell you what. If you're on the phones, stay on the phones. We'll get back to you as soon as we come back from this short commercial info. Thank you. Welcome back, general listeners. This is Soundbites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
How do we follow up that?
Yeah, really. And I've been...
Thanks, Rob.
A little bit missed.
I know you don't program the bumps.
The promotion.
I do not, because I am not impotent enough to be able to pick the music they use for the bumper music here. You know what I'm saying?
All righty. We won't go there.
Easy. We're on the air.
Yep. And I've been a little remiss since, you know, usually I don't sit in the seat to remind folks. You can reach us at 222-1180. On our 800 number, it's 1-800-295-1180. And for you Verizon folks, it's *1180. So give us a call, bring up your computer questions. And right now we'll go back to the phones. And we've got Jim in Penfield. Jim, you got some help for us?
Yes. Hi.
Hello there.
I downloaded Antivirus XP 2008. I was trying to run the SpyBot and the AdAware, and I thought they were free, but apparently they're not free anymore.
They all are still free, but they do have pay versions.
Okay, well, like when I downloaded the Antivirus XP 2008, it loaded everything, and I couldn't get rid of it.
Wait a minute. No.
Because it is a virus.
Yeah, that is a virus.
It's a fake program.
Oh, I got it.
Making it a Trojan, right?
Right on your site. It's that antivirus XP 2008. You know, when you go to the site, it's...
On our site?
Yeah. That's what I downloaded it from. Antivirus XP 2008.
No, you didn't download that from us.
Not from us. Because that is a Trojan, and what it is they want you to pay anywhere from $19.95 to $49.95, and all they do is steal your money, and you're still stuck with the virus.
Right, so what I did was I went to McAfee, their cat site, and I walked through it. We got rid of almost everything, except there's a message right on the display terminal that says, warning, spyware detected on your computer. Install an antivirus or spyware remover to clean your computer.
Yeah,
so I got back in touch with McAfee, and they gave me the DOS cleaner, and I ran through all that, and that didn't get rid of it either.
Well, guys, it's very hard to get rid of this.
This one is a malicious thing. One program you could try Super Anti Spyware. Do a Google search for Super Anti Spyware. See if that helps. See, what we've been doing here in our shop. And matter of fact, Nick wrote about it in his article this Sunday, which makes life a lot easier for me, is when folks come in with this XP antivirus program infested on their machines, what I normally do is before even hooking it up to the test bench, I first remove the hard drive out of their system, put it onto my test bench, because then that way I'm isolating it. That hard drive never gets to load any of the programs. So I do my diagnostics off of my bench onto that hard drive and get rid of a lot of the stuff there before even, you know, then I put it back in the machine and then do the rest of the cleaning. It is a very hard one to get rid of. And I think there's other variants that I've just seen the end of this past week start cropping up that I'm still a little suspicious of. And this is proving to be a nasty one. But yeah, that program did not come from our site. But it is infecting, and you could be going to various websites that have different ads. See, because folks will sit there and say, but I don't go to any bad sites. Good, right, you probably didn't. But if you go to any sites that have any ads, as far as, you know, up at the top or along the side that are constantly changing, those could be infected. Because folks rent out their sites to help pay for their site. And those can get infected, and then that's how you get infected.
Ouch, yeah, there's about 40 programs, and looks like about 15 register entries you have to clean out to get rid of this one. It's a really nasty one.
I cleaned out a lot of them with the person from McAfee, but I know there's more, because I'm getting, like, buffer overflow, you know, that's caught by McAfee, and then I just disregard it. And then I also get some DOS screen that comes up, and it says, close down Windows, or else. So I'm probably going to have to bring this machine in.
Yeah, this one, Jim, no lie, it is insidious. The way it sits there and just burrows itself in there, trying to get it out, is proving to be a major pain for us right now. And like I say, they're still trying to come up with some good utility. Most of them takes a little while, but this one is twisting and turning so many different ways that I think the folks, you know, like at McAfee and Norton and the rest of them are trying to come up with a good utility that you can just download, and it will literally get rid of everything. But this one, like I say, is spiraling, going in different areas, and it mutates itself to different names and everything else. It's a hard one to track down yet. All right, we got to take another break, folks. Tell you what, if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not, why not? You're listening to Wham! 1180. Okay, you're back to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And Mr. Nick is still home meditating over the issue of daughter wants to try.
Look out, everyone else.
Yeah. Oh, this should be
That'll
fun.
Be all right.
I mean, I still remember when Amelia was born and, you know, the joy in that. Now he gets to deal with this joy of dealing with a daughter driving. Been there, done that.
My son turns 10 in a couple of months, and we're into double digits.
Yeah, yep. All right, tell you what, let's go back to Barry in Pittsburgh. Barry, how can we help you today?
Hi, guys. Glad to talk to you.
Thank you.
I've been struggling trying to upgrade my laptop hard drive. It's a 60-gig drive. I'm trying to go to a 250. Mm-hmm. I bought a Western Digital 250. I'm pretty good with all the computer stuff. I've built my own for years.
Okay.
But I'm really stuck on this one because I've never tried to take a bootable drive and move it over to a new drive and make it be bootable.
Well, you got to use a program like Ghost.
Yep, I bought Ghost.
Well, oftentimes the programs come with their own cloning.
Yep, and that's a very good point because after I bought Ghost and I failed at that, having it work, then I went to Western Digital and they had their own programming. And I've been using their own programming. Now, I've been working on this since Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm starting to get to the point where I'm going to give it the rest of today. And then my last question would be, how much, if I bring my two hard drives in or my laptop, for you to move it over to the 250 gig and make it bootable?
We can do it, and it takes us about an hour and a half.
Okay. What's the fee for an hour and a half?
Tell you what.
About.
I don't like discussing prices on the air. I mean,
I understand.
Email me at dnwright@nwrightpc.com, and we can discuss this off-site. But yes, it's something we do on a daily basis because basically we take your two drives, hook them up to our test bench, so the two of them can be hooked up.
Okay, yeah, say that email address again and spell it.
dnwright.
E-N-R-I-G-H-T.
At nwrightpc.com.
Okay.
How old is the laptop?
2 years.
So he's not running into the 127 gig barrier.
I did run into the 127 gig barrier, but the Western Digital software worked me through that, and I got back to 250.
So you have the BIOS patch.
Yeah, it'll.
Are you transferring XP?
Yes.
Is it NTFS or is it FAT30?
NTFS.
That's the problem.
Oh.
NTFS makes it a lot harder to transfer, but it can be done.
Yeah, but Ghost, like I say, we just hook it up and you use Ghost and just copies the image from one to the other.
The trick is it's real easy. It's easier if you have one computer you can plug both drives into at the same time.
All right. Well, give it a shot. Like I say, email me. And by the sound of those great tones, that means we got to take a break, folks. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. And as soon as we hear from all these great folks and the, I believe, national news, you'll get back to Soundbites, and we'll be taking your calls on 1180 WHAM for your Soundbite logo request. I don't know. He's wanting me to draw it out.
We got 23 seconds to draw it out.
Yeah. Oh, see, he starts playing it so long, and then he just goes, oh, super long.
We get a minute at the top of the hour.
He's got to draw it out from one end of the street to the other.
You guys have never had a problem talking before. Keep going now. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I hear the song.
6, 5, 4. Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
A few minutes, folks. No, Nick is still home meditating and trying to contemplate about how he's going to deal with Amelia starting to drive. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. And bless you, sir.
I can't reach my cough button.
Yeah, well.
But I didn't have to cough.
Let me know. I'll reach it for you.
Tell you what, we'll head right back to the phones because we got somebody calling us from Horace from New York City.
Yeah.
You actually listening to us down there?
Yes, sir.
You take it on the web?
Yes.
Oh, cool. How can we help you today?
I have a small problem. Every time I put my finger on the power button to start my computer, it does not boot up the first time. And then I power down, it doesn't boot up. And about the third time, I do it and it boots up. What could be causing that?
What happens when it doesn't boot up?
Sometimes it makes a funny sound or the screen doesn't light up at all.
Could be the button wearing out,
or
the power supply wearing out.
Power supply, or it could be even something on the motherboard. The easiest way is to take it into a shop where they can try it with another power supply, because you might have something. If you're lucky, that's the easy thing. That it's just a power supply going.
I changed the power supply,
and it's still doing it.
It didn't do it when I changed the power supply. Then it started doing it again.
Horace, have you plugged it into a different outlet?
No, that I hate to say it, but I think it's the motherboard going.
Could be the motherboard.
Yeah, because the power supplies won't do it. It either goes or it doesn't.
Once it gets working, does it work fine?
Great.
I think he's got something starting to fail or go. If, what is it? The other test for the...
I was thinking low AC voltage on his line.
Yeah, try plugging it into a different outlet on a different circuit if you can.
It's a quick check.
Yeah. No, I'm trying to think of the other tests because there's SpinRite for...
SpinRite for hard drives, yeah.
You know what I try to do sometimes, though? I put it, instead of shutting it off, I put it in standby.
Yeah.
And then when I go to use it again, it's okay. I don't have the problem.
Right.
That keeps his power supply running.
But it, that's right.
Yeah, but I still think there's... His power supply is still applying electricity to the circuit, so it's not putting a load.
The standby trickle voltage until you short. Now, here's something you can try if you're comfortable inside your computer.
Yes, I am.
Find the two wires that the power button is connected to, so when you short them, it turns on, and see if shorting those two wires turns it on immediately. And then it may be the soft power button on the computer, because the way computers work these days... You push the button on the front, which activates a circuit on the motherboard. Remember the olden days when there used to be mechanical buttons you turned on?
Yeah, actual toggle switches.
Yep.
Yeah. So give that a shot, though. And, hey, if you get a chance, give us a call back. We'd like to know what happened. All right. We'll move on to Mark in Greece. Go ahead, Mark.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I had a question for you. Over the past 4 days, I've been trying to install Service Pack 3 for Windows XP because it downloaded and said it was ready to be installed. And I've done it 3 times. It failed to install. And the 4th time I did it, it said it didn't install, had to reboot the computer. And it said part of it installed, but the whole thing didn't install. Only pieces of it did, yet it reports that Service Pack 3 is now installed on my system properties.
So it says it is installed?
Yeah.
But it didn't finish?
Yeah, well, thing that is, though, it might not take... This is where Microsoft is kind of confusing. It'll sit there and say it fails, but it's failing because certain services that it wanted to install, you're not using.
Okay.
So there might be certain parts that you really don't use or don't need. So it thinks, well, gee, it failed then. But in reality, it didn't.
Okay.
You know, it's just that you're not using
it. What's the failure message you're getting?
The failure message was kind of ambiguous. It just said portions or pieces of it did not install.
Yeah.
And that your system may not run right. Basically is what it said.
But it's running okay.
But it's running fine.
Yeah.
And it
reports
the Service Pack 3 being installed.
Yeah. No, you're okay, Mark.
But it failed 3 times totally, would not install. And the system hung and wouldn't respond. I left it sitting for 3 hours one day, and it just wouldn't move.
Well, that could also just be because of the demands right now. Because Microsoft just did, this past Tuesday, did major upgrades, and updates.
Okay.
To the Service Pack. So the reason it might have failed, that's the only reason I'm not getting too nervous about, it failing in that, is because there was such a big load on people trying to download and do the upgrades.
Okay.
That, there was a lot of traffic this week.
I did notice after it failed, I think the 2nd or the 3rd time, there were... Service Pack 3 didn't pop up again in the system tray, but the Shield did, and there was a bunch of updates I had to do.
Yeah.
I did those, and then I think the 4th time it finally did install.
Yeah, it's just because of the load. Yeah, okay. I mean, like I say, this was the week.
You could check your the event viewer and see if there's any error messages.
Okay.
There's a couple of links at Microsoft, depending on what the error message actually was, on what to do when SP3 won't install.
But like I say, I think for the most part, you should be okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're quite welcome. All right, we'll bop right on over to Roger in Irondequoit. Boy, we're getting a lot of folks from Irondequoit today. Go ahead, Roger.
Okay, Nick. Nick isn't there today. I'm sorry.
No, he's still home meditating.
This XP antivirus Trojan that's been popping up on people.
Yep.
If it's the same one that I've seen where it will actually take the graphic away from your desktop and just leave this notice in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I found a program that I ran across while trying to get a DNS hijacker out of a friend's system. It's called Malwarebytes.
Yeah, that was the link I posted.
Why?
Yep.
Did you just post it?
Yeah, that was the antivirus XP 2008 removal instructions I posted from the last caller.
Okay, yeah, I found it a couple of months ago, been using it. It's great. It sometimes will actually update the files 2 and 3 times a day. There have actually been 4 new versions released since the 18th of July. So he's a nice, reliable program.
Cool. Yep.
Okay, well, I'll let somebody else get on there. I just thought I'd drop by with that.
Thank you very much. No, thank you very much.
Yeah, we're kind of calling some of these programs hostageware because they install, they pop up a screen, and you can't do anything else until you pay for them. But they're fake.
Yep. All right, tell you what, we're going to stay right in Irondequoit, and we'll go back over to Ron. Ron's in Irondequoit. How can we help you, Ron?
Hello, everybody. A few days ago, I bought a SanDisk Cruiser Micro USB 2 flash drive, 8 gigabytes, and I didn't open it until a couple days later. I went to look at the back of it, and I remembered I didn't check the system requirements before I bought it. It says it needs Windows XP or 2000 Service Pack 4 or Vista, but I have ME. Does that mean it will not work on ME, and if so, why not?
10-1,
it's the U3.
Yeah.
There's this huge mess, and it's terrible. I wish they'd stop doing this. There's this technology called U3 that come on these little flash drives. I think SanDisk is one of the originators of it.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be a convenience for users. When you plug this drive into a computer, the U3 software runs and will automatically execute programs on your disk.
When you plug it into a PC.
Not a Mac. So you plug it into a PC and it automatically runs the program for you, including viruses. So it's a huge virus vector, and they should stop making these disks.
Ooh.
So that U3 software probably doesn't work under ME, which just means that it will work as an ordinary flash drive, which is good. In fact, you can go to SanDisk's website and download the U3 removal thing, and you'll get that 64 megs, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's this locked partition on the flash drive that has all the U3 software on it, and you can get that removed and turn it into a full flash drive again.
Yeah, some of them will even let you reformat it. Yeah. And then
it'll work just fine as a flash drive, but the U3 software won't work.
Which you don't need.
You don't want to use that because of the virus potential. What was I listening to this week? Someone was talking about a classroom they were in. Yeah, they were taking a class on security, and the professor handed out a flash drive and said, everyone install this on their computer. Okay, that's not very secure, is it?
Well, there
could have been a virus on that he infected anyone with, or if anyone in the class had a virus, everyone else now has it too because it grabs the flash drive.
That's why I wound up going out, because I had a jump drive for the longest time, and this is what really ticked me off is the technology is out there. I mean, we've had it since floppy drives, and that's a way of locking the disk. And that's what's scary. These jump drives right now had no locking system on them. I had a jump drive
still makes some that with locks on them.
That was a 512 flash drive that had a little locking on it. So, you know, that started getting too full. So what I wound up doing is going online, and I found these USB drives that also take an SD card in them. So I can put the SD card in it, snap it shut, and it's got a locking mechanism on it. So when I go to other clients, I've got all my utilities on there. I can put it into their machine. I know I'm not going to get any viruses from them because nothing can get on my drive. So I'm not going to give them anything because it's always locked.
Yep.
And there's no way, as a computer repair place, I want to be responsible for infecting some other person's machine, because that could mean major lawsuit. You know, especially on some companies, if I destroyed their data and everything else and unleashed a virus, like you say. But yet,
if
folks will
vector,
sit there and go around with these flash drives. Oh, here, I got this great program. Here, try it out. And they put it in.
Well, that's how the first viruses transmitted was through floppies before the internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Long before the internet, you pass your floppy around and it would infect your computer, and then the next disk you'd put in. Remember, we used to have to tell people when you scan your hard drive, your 1 meg hard drive back in the olden days, and you scan your hard drive for viruses, you got to scan every single floppy you have too, which hundreds or thousands of floppies.
Yep. All right, let's go to Brian in Fairport. Brian, how can we help you? Hello, Brian.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Quick question before my main question. Is SP3 okay with XP yet, or is there still problems?
I'm sorry, say again?
Is SP3 for XP okay yet?
Yeah.
Generally, yes. We have read some interesting conflicts with some types of software, but generally, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Like I say, here, the key thing, though, Brian, and I'll stress this to everybody, when you're doing these P3 update, take the time to read the screens.
Yeah, I do.
Especially the screen
that says, do you want to keep the uninstall files? Yes.
Yes.
Just in case you have a problem, you can always uninstall it.
Always.
It's called CYA.
Right, right. Okay, I have a question. friend called me last week, and she happened to be over last night, and it happened to me too. AVG went to update, and it said bin file missing. I uninstalled it, restarted, reinstalled it from the website, and still think it won't update.
Does it say which bin file?
No, it just says A with capital A, that bin file is missing.
Again, what you might want to do, and I was recommending this to a number of other folks, so see, even though these programs sit there and they say they uninstall,
right,
they lie. Lie big time. What I would recommend is going and getting that program Revo, R-E-V-O. Download that, install that. Use that to uninstall the AVG.
Okay.
And use option number 4. It's the very bottom one.
Okay.
And it will come up with, after it uninstalls the program, you'll go to another screen. And it's going to find all the registry entries.
Right.
You say select all, delete.
Well, I'm pretty comfortable in there.
Yeah,
that,
and you do all, you
well,
run that.
I both have the problem.
Did you recently update from AVG 7.5 to 8?
It was probably 3 months ago.
Because 8
it's
just came out.
It's not an uncommon problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, my friend had the same thing. That's why I figured something with a program or their server.
Yeah, try the Revo to uninstall it and see if that solves it for
it
you.
It could also have been, I'm seeing some reports here, it could have also been that AVG was busy during the update. The A.bin, that's the name of the file,
yeah,
and that's one of the update files it's trying to download.
All right, well, let us know, Brian. You know, I mean, that's about all we can do.
I'm
there has
to
been
dig
some,
into
issues,
some more updates here.
But from the sounds of those great tones, we've got to take another commercial break from a lot of great folks that advertise here on Wham, and you should give them a listen on Wham 1180.
Get up, take a shower.
You're listening to Soundbites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
So who is that? Cool in the Gang?
You're kidding me, right? Please tell me you're kidding. Please tell me you're kidding. That's Average White Band right there.
Yeah.
Pick up the pieces.
There are new programs coming out. It's really cool. There's one for the iPhone. We just got one for Verizon cell phones. You hear a song playing, you hold your phone up, it listens to the song, looks it up, and tells you what the song is. And there's even one that where you can hum the song or sing the song into it, and it will tell you what the song is.
That's scary.
Yeah. Really scary. How does it? Waveform analysis? It's got somewhere a database of all the waveforms?
We can't do speech recognition well, and we're doing music recognition?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
It's no different than a lot of programs out there that songs are preloaded in for radio stations, for example. There's basically this rack somewhere that has a bunch of radios tuned to a radio station and listens. And it, you know, listens to a song. It's in the database. It pulls it up, displays it on your website. It's probably no different than that.
Yeah, it's got to record the waveform because there's only a certain number of songs that sound exactly the same. Where with speech, everyone's speech is slightly different.
Well, it's got a bunch of, just a couple seconds of each song probably loaded in.
But performers can change the key of a tune. It would have to be able to compensate
for that.
Well,
for live recordings, that'd be tough. But for pre-recorded music.
Mm-hmm. Have to have a fingerprint analysis. It would be a waveform analysis based on the recording, not the song.
Right. Nick, Nick knew a guy who could tell the song by looking at the grooves on a record album?
Yeah. I don't believe that.
Yeah. Me neither.
Well, if you can see the waveform.
Oh, well, I don't believe it.
Yeah. All right, tell you what, let's go back to the phones, and we're going to go to Doug in York. Go ahead, Doug.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi there.
York, New York?
York, New York, down by Geneseo.
Okay.
My question is, I've got I think it's about a 4-year-old Acer notebook, and the other day it just kind of locked up. I was on the web and wouldn't reboot, so I turned it off. It did nothing. I pulled the battery. It let me put in my password and then went, again, just gives me a black screen. The hard drive light is lit up solid, not blinking. Is it worth working on? Would it be a hard drive? Or any thoughts on that?
Can you hear the hard drive even whirring up?
I do not.
Can you remove the hard drive easily? Sometimes if you turn it over, there's like one screw and you can pull the hard drive out.
I thought about doing that. I've never played with a notebook. I've built some other desktops, and it should be able to get it out. I see the screws on the bottom.
Yeah.
Side.
Yeah. Then if it boots up fine and says no OS, then you know it's the hard drive.
Yeah.
If it doesn't boot up, then it's something more and probably not worth it.
Yeah, and you can do it or take it somewhere and have a diagnostic done on it. We do that all the time. It's $40 and tell you whether it's worth saving or not.
Okay, well, that sounds good.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay, doke. Good luck.
Yeah, that's always rough these days with new computers. You know, computers are such a commodity item these days. The new ones are so cheap, it almost never pays to repair the old one.
That's the thing I ran into, a laptop.
Yeah.
17-inch screen.
Especially laptops, yeah. You break the screen? Yeah.
Yeah, they broke the screen, and it was going to be, I think to replace that particular screen, it was like $675.
Just for the screen, yeah.
Just for the screen, they go.
And then 3 or 4 hours labor to tear the computer completely apart.
Well, screens aren't too bad to do. You can usually do those in about an hour or two.
Sometimes it depends if you can get the screen off without taking the computer apart first.
Yeah. Try to add all that up. It's like the guy goes, I can probably get another computer for a little bit more. I go, yeah.
Yep.
And then use that one as a desktop with an external monitor.
With an external monitor.
It's just getting to be that way. Yeah. A lot of folks are just doing that. Just hooking up a nice big screen to it. Keyboard and mouse, and they're ready to go. It's just nice and slim now, or they fold it up and just set it up against the wall behind this flat panel.
Yeah.
And just use the keyboard and mouse.
Or if we had a customer break the screen completely off and then use it as a desktop.
Why not? Another caller offline didn't want to come on the air, evidently bashful or afraid we'll rip on him or something. I don't know. I never pick on people.
We leave that to Nick.
That's for story hour. But never on the air, and I never mentioned names. But somebody wanted some advice on backing up. That's so diverse right now, both on the PC and the Mac side. But on the PC side, I mean, you can back stuff up to flash drives. There's external hard drives.
It used to be floppies or CDs, but that's time-consuming and tedious, and so it never gets done.
And I don't know, and I'll speak just to the PC side, but you can speak to the Mac side here in a second. The key thing that I always tell folks is, just back up your data. Don't worry about the programs, because that's just Microsoft's way of saying, hey, you needed to reinstall all over again anyways. But it's always your data, your emails, and everything else. And the easy way to do that on the PC side right now with XP is if you go to the file and transfer setting program, you can tell it to run that program and tell it to do, this is the old computer. And it says, all right, where do you want to put this folder? And you can create a folder, call it backed up data, and create a folder there and point it to there. It will back up all your emails, all your desktop settings, all your documents and everything else and put it into a folder. You can burn that folder to either CD, DVD, depending on the size, move it off to a flash drive or an external hard drive. This way, if something happens to your machine, you can reload the Windows and all your programs, put this back in, tell it to restore. It will put back all your emails, all your documents, all your bookmarks, everything else, and it's there.
A lot of backup hard drives also come with an automatic backup program. Retrospect is a common one, Silver Keeper, Backup My PC. And they will run and periodically back up your changed files, because that's always the biggest thing we hear a lot of times. I made a backup 6 months ago, but in the last 6 months, there's a lot of stuff I don't want to lose. Mm-hmm. So having some sort of an automatic backup program is nice. Apple with the system 10.5 has an automatic backup program built in called Time Machine. And it's usually just most convenient to back up to a hard drive, because we have so much data now with pictures and movies and video that it just doesn't fit on CDs or flash drives anymore.
And Chris,
I meant Leopard on my Mac. And I have
the Unix, though?
Oh, in Unix?
Yeah.
Actually, I don't back up anything in Unix just yet. I'm not there yet.
You have the internet.
I'm running Unix right now in virtualization, so it's being backed up while I back up my Mac.
Okay.
But I back up the entire hard drive. It runs at 5 o'clock every morning.
Talks to rsync. Rsync is a backup program built into Unix.
And I'm using Carbon Copy
Unix.
Cloner, which is functionally
another great program
equivalent
for the Mac. Yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't CCC call rsync? Isn't it? I think that's how it works.
It might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, rsync built into Unix will synchronize your computer with another hard drive somewhere, so all your stuff is backed up. And on the Macintosh, all of your stuff generally lives in your home folder. So that's the biggest thing, going back to what Dave said, just back up your documents so it's easiest if you put them in one place.
Yeah, that's usually always the key thing, you know. I had somebody come in again to save their thesis.
Right. Where is it? I don't know.
It's on the hard drive and they hadn't backed up. Could you please get it off there? Luckily,
where is it? It's in Word. Well, not really. Word is the program to create it. Where did you save it on the hard drive? I don't know.
Yep.
Okay, you just added an hour or two to your time. So I got to scavenge your hard drive looking for it.
Exactly. All right, tell you what. Gee, we're going back to Arundequoit. All right, Brian, how can we help you?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
That's good. Hey, I had a security question for you. I'm a big fan of technical bulletin board. I won't give you the name of it, but I've gone there quite a bit, done a lot of posting and back and forth with people. Middle of the week this week, I got a notification from the system administrator that said I was posting porn on the board. And it's not something I did, you know, at all.
Not intentionally.
Exactly what I mean. You know, and then I got a warning at first, then I got a second warning the next day that said my account had been canceled.
It's very, very easy to fake someone's name, to send email in someone else's name and attach porn to it, or attach viruses.
The thing is, it has to be a minor incident because, you know, he didn't cancel everyone's account.
With most forums, you probably have to log in with a username and password to post to it.
Yep.
Because of the problem with random postings. So what probably happened is someone guessed your account name and password, or some robot cracked it and started sending information in your name. So
Brian,
it probably wasn't you or even your computer.
What I would suggest, this is an off thing, more or less to cover your butt and protect you, is I would email the administrator, email him back, and ask him if you could please change your password.
Well, actually, that was the second part of my question. I had been trying to contact this guy. I mean, it's actually a board that I like a lot. It's a technical board about cell phones and computers and things.
Yeah.
And it's something that I find very interesting, but I can't get access to the guy because both my IPs that I access this board from have been blocked.
They've blocked your IP, too.
Yeah.
Then, get to the library.
Yeah. Go there, go somewhere else, and send them an email. Mm-hmm. And let him know that,
well, now, if his IP has been blocked, it may have been his computer then.
Yeah, because I consider my machines, both machines I use, very secure. I don't believe there's anything on any of my machines that would have done that randomly. And I don't have any other problems with any other boards that
somebody
I've
was spoofing.
Or,
some robot somewhere was spoofing your IP and spoofing your username and password and posting junk as you.
Okay.
A very easy thing to do, unfortunately.
Yeah, and just let him know that you were spoofed. Email him. Like I said, go somewhere else.
He might not even have done it. The physical admin of that board may not have done it himself.
It's just a robot.
He has robots at his end that delete
do it too.
Stuff like that. Yeah, we have one on our Soundbites group boards because of that, too.
Well, that's just it. I've actually posted, and I go to your board quite a bit, and there was no problems there.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah. Brian, I would go somewhere else if you can. You know, log in. Let him know what's going on. And if you have to, you might have, you know, it's just so he unblocks you.
Or make a new username and password for it.
But if the IP has been blocked,
he's still going to get blocked there.
He's got to get unblocked from there. So, yeah, I would go somewhere else, email him, and let him know that you didn't do this. Please unblock your IP. That you were spoofed and ask to have your password changed.
Right.
Brian, do you have a permanent IP address?
He's already gone. All right, let's go to Vito in Chile. Vito, how you doing, sir?
Oh, hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
No, I'm Dave.
I called earlier, maybe a couple of months ago, about Firefox not always opening up. And it's something that I went back to and got an earlier version, installed it, no help. And I go into the Internet, and there's a lot of people having the same thing, server not found.
Well, that's a different question. Firefox not launching or not finding a website?
It doesn't launch.
Well, if you're getting a server not found error, then it is launching and is trying to open a website.
It's my homepage, and it's not responding to that.
Right, so that means that Firefox is launching and is running.
Yeah, but it's just not finding.
But it's not finding a page. If you go to a different page, does it work?
If I go on the Internet, I can surf, but I can't go to my homepage.
Something's wrong with your homepage provider.
Well, when I go to them, they say it's not the case. But when I go into the profile issue problem that Firefox puts out, they say that the profile should be read-only. I mean, it should not be read-only, and to delete that. There's nothing I can do to change that property, though. It won't let me change the property of read-only.
Have you cleared out the cache?
If you type the name of your homepage yourself and not use a bookmark, does that work?
I haven't tried that.
Yeah, try that, and then resave that as your homepage.
And also clear out the cache.
Cache and history and settings, yeah.
When I go to tools, though, and options, and I go to where my homepage says, when Firefox starts, show my homepage. I put it in there, and if I use this, you know, this is what it's going to use, it doesn't find it. And sometimes, even though it says that it's online, it's not online. It won't let you to surf either. It's just very questionable.
I haven't run into that.
What about the comment that they're putting on the internet about the profile not being read-only? If it's read-only, they claim it's a problem. It should not be read-only.
That makes sense because it has to write information back if you change your homepage. There were some, not viruses, homepage redirectors that fake your homepage into a spy site and then prevent you from changing your homepage again. You might want to run the Security Tango on it.
Yeah, try
sure
running the Tango just to make sure. And also use super anti-spyware. That's another one that sniffs out quite a bit of stuff. Okay, well, we got to take a break. Listen to these great information of these folks that advertise here on Wham, because they've got some good products that you might want to listen to on 1180 WHAM. Picking some good music. I still...
Sounds like 80s.
Yeah, I can't take the credit for this music. Pick up the pieces I can. I picked that out.
You do good. You took the best. All right, folks, you're back to Sound Bites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we're taking your computer questions, and that's what we'll do. And go right back to...
But, and the phone numbers are?
Oh, yeah, thank you.
I'll give the phone numbers again. 222-1180. The One Communications 800 number at 800-295-1180, or for Verizon Wireless customers at *1180.
Very cool.
Well done, Steve.
Yes. Jump right in there and cover my butt. Between the three of us, we'll get it done.
It takes the three of us to replace Nick. He's irreplaceable.
Yeah, but he's been doing it for how many years?
I know.
Here,
it just rolls up. I had
18
someone,
years, 11 months.
Something like that. Yeah, I had someone ask about the Dave's rant. You know, can I get a copy of the script?
What script?
Yeah, Nick says that word for word every week. Yes, he does.
Because he's been doing it. Yeah. Every week.
There's no script. It's word for word every week.
Yeah, he just rolls into it, and then I just roll into my rant, and it's like, it reminds me of, Friends. You know how they always show up to their coffee shop and to meet?
Right.
And the one, because I don't watch the program, but this one that I happen to see, they all come in, and I guess evidently they sit at this one couch, and they come in, and other folks are sitting at their couch, and it's like they turned around and they didn't know what to do, so they all went home because somebody was sitting in their couch. So it's like, you know, Nick shows up here without Nick. It's like, I can't do the rant. I got to go home. I can't do it.
Well, you're in a different chair, Dave. Yeah. So
I know Dave is in a different chair, but Chris and I are in the same chair as always.
Well, you know, what can I say? All right, tell you what, we got a few minutes. Let's go back to the phones and we'll take Bob from Rochester. Go ahead, Bob.
Hi, gentlemen. I have two laptops. One's running XP and one's running Vista. And I want to set them up both to connect wirelessly to Roadrunner. But the router I'm going to use is the Time Capsule router. Is that possible?
Sure.
All right.
Would you like more details? No.
Oh, he wants to know how to do it.
Wi-Fi was actually invented by Apple and Lucent, and everyone else has picked up on it. So it is a standard, and all the computers work with it. The biggest trick you sometimes run into, although with XP and Vista you shouldn't, is that sometimes under Windows you need to enter your hexadecimal password, or you have to enter your wireless password in hex rather than in ASCII. But that's typically only true on older computers. So, yeah, the Time Capsule creates a wireless signal, and any other computer can connect into it.
Okay, and then about a month later, I'm going to want to hook up a MacBook. And so while the XP and the Vista are connected wirelessly, there will be no problem hooking up the MacBook wirelessly later down the road to that Time Capsule.
That's correct. There will be no problem.
No problems. Time Capsule supports, I think, 50 simultaneous users, something like that.
All right. So it's basically just plug them in directly into a Time Capsule first with an Ethernet cable so they recognize the two laptops.
You don't even need to use that. You can connect them wirelessly the first time as well.
Oh, all right.
If you don't put a password on your network, which you should, Windows has a secondary security question where you go into the network. What are they called? View network connections. Mm-hmm. If you try to connect to an unsecured network, it gives you a secondary warning. Are you sure? And then you can say yes. So you do want to put a password on your wireless network, to prevent other people from getting into your network as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Next. Yeah, other people could end up being part of his 50 users and load up his time capsule.
Right. Happened to one of the guys at Cider where he accidentally left a null, basically no password out. I think it was test. And his hard drive filled up in a week because the internet found him as a pirate site and started loading reloading pirate movies on him because there was a hard drive they could use, and they did.
Okay, speaking of hard drive noises, we got Clyde and Webster's got one. Go ahead, Clyde. Hello, Clyde.
I've got I guess someone set up a server-type network at the office. It's on a tower of a desktop, I guess an old desktop he had, and it's making all types of noise now. Does that mean the hard drive might be going?
Depends.
It could be. It depends on where the noise is coming from. It could be coming from the fans. It could be coming from the power supply.
You got to actually open up the case and kind of listen for the noise. I had one this week that I thought it was a power supply. I thought it was a fan. And it's making like a crackling noise. And it's coming literally from the motherboard. So you got to take the side off, Clyde, and actually
There's
listen for it.
Nothing on the motherboard that makes noises. There is now.
If it sparks, it makes noises.
Yeah. Yeah, so it could be the hard drive, but it depends on where in the computer it's coming from.
And it's easier to find the noises, Clyde, if you take the side off and listen to it while it's doing it. We got to take a break. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. We'll try to get back to you when we come back from this short break. You're listening to Wham! 1180 Soundbites. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to listen to the song. No, I wanted to listen to the...
That's the Bo Diddley beat.
Yeah, Bo Diddley. All right, you're listening to Soundbites, and I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Chris Reich.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I enjoy some of the tunes that you put up there, and I like to listen to them for a couple seconds. Just appreciate it.
All right.
All right. We'll go right back to the phones. We'll talk to Dave in Farmington. Go ahead, Dave.
I have iTunes under Vista. And I'm trying to get it to share with Windows Media Player.
Well, it depends on what you mean by share.
Yeah.
You can point Windows Media Player to the iTunes library and have it see all the songs in the iTunes folders, and you can point iTunes. Well, iTunes has its own library files.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so
but it points to MP3s.
But any MP3 that there's a preference in iTunes that will copy the music into the iTunes library when you import it, or will leave it on your hard drive wherever you want it to be.
Dave, before we let Steve go on, are you importing your music as MP3s or something else?
My wife did most of our CD collection onto the hard drive, so I'm not sure what format they're in.
Yeah, they're going to have to be MP3s for the...
You imported them into iTunes?
Yes.
The default setting in iTunes is AAC, which is a much better quality format than MP3. But I don't know if Windows Media Player can do AAC.
I'm quite confident it can't.
So if I look and see that it's an AAC, I might be able to convert them over to MP3, at least for the ones we want to be able to play through the media player.
You can convert them at even more loss in quality, but if that's what you want to do, yes, it can be done.
Yeah, MP3 is a lower quality format, so the sound will get worse. But yeah, iTunes will convert it to an MP3 if you want it to.
Okay.
Or you could re-rip them into a WMV or WMA into Windows Media Player. Can we ask why you want to play some of them in Windows Media Player versus iTunes?
Some of them to share with the media player that we're using will not copy from iTunes. They only copy from Media Player.
Oh, it's a portable media player that you're talking about.
Right, but I don't want to copy the entire library over to the media player.
That's probably the same reason, because iTunes uses AAC, not MP3 by default. You can go into iTunes preferences and change the default to MP3, but then you're going to get lower quality songs.
Gotcha.
Unless you increase the rate at which they're sampled.
Yeah, you could go to 192K and you get a little better than the 128K.
Okay, good luck, and we got enough time to take one more call. All right, let's get to this last caller, Mike from Irondequoit again. A lot of folks in Irondequoit.
Call, gentlemen. I got a system error I'd like to talk a little bit about today.
All right, go ahead. Make it quick.
It's going to be ISASS.exe.
I've seen that go by before.
The thing is, I can't get onto the desktop. It's just, when I turn it on, it's just completely blue.
Let's do a Google on that. Does it work in safe mode?
Okay, you've tried loading up in safe mode?
I've I think they suggested like F2 or F11.
Well, F8 will bring up the menu, and if you can get into safe mode, you can try doing a system restore to a previous point in time. Okay. If you can get in safe mode. If you can't, then reload Windows over Windows.
It looks like ISASS is a fake file.
Yep.
Because it's not listed as a real Windows file.
Meaning a Trojan or a virus.
Is it LASS?
Right, yeah. Is it an L or an A or an I? Is it?
If it's that program, reinstall Windows over Windows, and that will correct it.
Right. LASASS is a valid Windows program.
Yep.
But ISASS is not.
Okay, well, that's it, folks. It's been another great week, and hey, sorry, we got through all your calls, but it wasn't as smooth as when good old Dr. Nick is here, but, you know, hey, he should be back next week, and the whole entourage should be here and back in rare form. We promise we'll do the rant, because without Nick here, it's just not the normal rant.
And the poll.
And the poll and everything else. So, you know, hey, folks, we'll catch you next week. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Sunday on WHAS.